We have studied three of Israel's six cycles of sin against the Lord. Three remain. But before we begin our study of the fourth cycle, let us take just a moment to discover something interesting, and that's the number of years that have passed since the death of Joshua to this point in chapter 6 of the book of Judges. Cycle 1. Now, remember this. Joshua died. Then the Israelites had this unknown number of years of sin of worshiping Canaanite idols. So I've got a question mark out there. Not exactly sure how many years that occurred in that time period. Then Israel was under the oppression in the first cycle, cycle 1, of Cushan for 8 years. So we have 8 years. Then Othniel comes in to be the judge, frees Israel from Cushan, and keeps Israel free for 40 years, and then Othniel dies. The second cycle begins upon the death of Othniel. Israel's unknown years of sin of worshiping Canaanite idols begins again. How many years? We do not know. Then Israel is under the oppression of Eglon of Moab for 18 years. Then the Lord pulls Ehud to be the judge to free Israel, and he rules and frees Israel for 80 years. That's the second cycle. Now we also know that a man by the name of Shamgar comes into play, and he kills all these Philistines. And he's acting as a judge, but he was not called to be a judge in the same way that Othniel and Ehud was called, or neither the next one, Deborah. So, and we know from Josephus' testimony that we've already talked about that Shamgar only probably lived about a year to a year and a half after the death of Ehud. So he didn't judge very long. Then we come to cycle 3, which we studied in the last two lessons. Israel has this unknown number of years of sin, of worshiping, yes, here we are again, Canaanite idols. It's a question mark. We don't know how many years. And Israel then comes under the oppression of Jabin, a Canaanite, for 20 years. The Lord calls up Deborah to judge, and she frees Israel for another 40 years. When you add all of those times of oppression and freedom, we have 206 years, not including those three question mark times. We don't have those. Now, you probably ask the question, why is this important? Well, here's the reason. Some commentaries of the past attempt to shorten the time of these judges with the excuse, and it's an excuse, that some of these cycles, 1, 2, and 3, and even 4, 5, and 6, lay on top of each other, laying on top of each other in some form or fashion in different parts of the Promised Lands. One's being the southern Promised Lands being oppressed and the northern Promised Lands being oppressed at the same time, lay them on top of each other. But with these three cycles that we have seen already, it is impossible for in these cycles to overlap in any way, form, or fashion. How can we determine that? Well, in the first cycle, the oppressor was from Aram, northeast of the Promised Land. Damascus was his hometown. Yet the judge who conquered the king of Aram was from the very farthest southern portion of the Promised Land. Therefore, what was happening way up north was taken care of by those way down south, and they understood the problem. So in short, this whole nation of Israel was involved in ridding the nation of this oppressor from Aram up north. In that second cycle, the oppressor was from Moab, off to the east, and Ammon off to the east, and Amalek, who had moved into the territory with Moab and stayed. And their base camp was at Jericho, there in Benjamin's territory. Now the judge that conquered them and took care of them, Ehud, was from Ephraim's tribe, which was just north of Benjamin's area, and he was assisted by much of the nations of Israel, all up and down, below and above, to rid the whole nation of this oppressor. Well, in the third cycle, the oppressor was again in the far north portion of the promised land, in the tribal area of Naphtali's, where he was judging from. But the judge lived down in Ephraim again, in the central portion of the promised land. And the story tells us of all the tribes of Israel who helped to rid the entire nation of this conqueror by the name of Jabin and his commander Caesarea. It also tells us of the tribes that did not help, and it chastised those tribes for not helping. So the chastisement confirms that when oppressors were in the promised land, all the tribes were expected to help rid the nation of the oppressors. Now, as we will see as we come to the fourth cycle, the tribes who were not invited to help rid the nation of the new oppressor are going to do something. They weren't invited, so they're going to complain. This complaint helps to bolster the truth that these cycles of sin were nationwide. And that is the reason the Lord allowed an oppressor to control the whole nation of Israel. As such, when the entire nation cried out to the Lord provided a judge to rescue the entire nation. Now, in addition, the whole nation must have helped with representatives in the fight to rid the nation of the oppressors, and they wanted to do that because the whole nation was being oppressed by these oppressors. Well, as we turn to the fourth cycle of sin, at least 206 years have passed. We do not know how quickly these nations, the nation of Israel, fell into sin after the judge's death. That's the reason I had the question mark there. But at least in the second cycle, where Shamgar is mentioned, it did not take long. How long did it take overall in all three and even in this fourth one? Well, it all comes down to this. It only took as long as was needed for a generation to come into view and into power who did not experience or see the mighty works of the Lord when, in the first cycle, in the second cycle, or the third cycle, and get this, or anything before. For that, how long would it take? Well, the reality is this. It only took long enough for children who are oblivious to everything going on to become young adults, to take over into positions of power. And that is less than a decade. Therefore, it seems safe to me to say that the people worshiped these false gods, where my question marks were, for less than a decade in each cycle before the Lord allowed the oppressor to take the whole nation. Well, what does that mean? That means we probably are safe to say that we can add to that 206 years for those question marks, the question marks that I had there in those first three cycles, plus this third cycle that's about to begin, at least 40 years. In other words, we are right at 240 to 250 years of time has passed since the death of Joshua. Okay. So, with the beginning of chapter 6 in the book of Judges, cycle 4 begins. And with cycle 4 beginning, we see the Midianite takeover start. The story starts with the struggle of Israel. I hope you turn in your Bibles to chapter 6 and verse 1 and read along with me. The text says this, "Then the sons of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hands of Midian 7 years." What's new? Cycle 1 began with that same passage, same wording. Cycle 2 began with that same wording. Cycle 3 began with the same wording. Now cycle 4 begins with, guess what? The same wording. So you can also look ahead. Cycle 5 and cycle 6 will begin with what? The same wording. What was the sin of Israel? The sin of Israel was the same sin that had occurred in those first three cycles. Israel had forgotten the covenant and the commandments of the Lord and worshiped Canaanite gods. And the sin is always the same in all of the cycles. It is the reason the Lord wanted the Canaanites destroyed in the first place. Because of their sin, the Lord allowed the Midianites to come, in this case, cycle 4, to oppress the nation of Israel for 7 years. Who were the Midianites? We've already covered this once, but I'm going to cover it again for you. Midian was the original father of the tribe of Midian. He was a son of Abraham with Abraham's wife Keturah. Remember, Sarah had died. Abraham remarried, and that is remarried Keturah, and that is in Genesis chapter 25, verse 1 is actually where his boys are mentioned. Before Abraham's death, and before he bequeathed all he owned to his son Isaac, Abraham gave a gift to each of his sons and sent them away to the east to establish their own tribes and nations. Midian did so and was successful. His descendants were numerous. His land stretched from east of Edom, east of Esau's land, all the way down to what we know as the area of Dubai, down in Saudi Arabia today, and all across that Arabian Peninsula. He was spread out all across it. It was on the east side of the Sea of Aqaba and on the east side of the Red Sea. Mount Sinai, that we've talked about, where the nation of Israel was camped for 40 years, was in the tribal area of the territory of Midian. Midian's ancestors had many sub-tribes within them. Many different little tribes by different names, but they were all tied to Midian. For instance, we have already met in the book of Judges the Kenites, a Midian tribe. Moses' father-in-law and Moses' wife were Midianites through the Kenite line. Thus, the Midianites that the Lord used to oppress and test Israel were, get this, close cousins of Israel. Just as the Moabites and the Amorites in the second cycle were close cousins of the Israelites. So with the struggle, the writer tells us what Israel did when the Midians prevailed in verse 2. The power of Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of Midian, the sons of Israel made for themselves the dens which were in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds. Now we have yet to discover how the Midians or the Midianites oppressed Israel. We don't know how they did it, but that will soon come about in the text. Our writer is preparing us for the revelation of the Midianite kind of oppression by telling us what the people of Israel did to protect themselves from the Midianite oppression that is coming. He's telling us. He's going to tell us. And the writer says this, "And the sons of Israel made for themselves the dens which were in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds." So we have dens, we have caves, and we have strongholds. That's what we read there in verse 2. Now, dens are numerous in the Promised Land, and here's the reason why. The land of the Promised Land is covered with limestone mountains. Limestone is a natural calcium carbonate that dissolves in water. So when water trickles through the mountain's crevices and potholes and everything after a rain, or when snow is melting, this calcium carbonate would melt away, forming fissures and clefts and holes in the mountains of all sizes. They get larger and larger and larger as this calcium carbonate dissolves away. These holes are called dens because animals would use them for temporary and for permanent homes. Now, we've all heard of the term lion's den or the den of wolves. These are animals that are just examples of how creatures use these natural forming limestone holes as homes. Caves were different. They were natural caverns in the mountains, not formed by dissolving limestone, but by the shifting and the moving of the rocks. Strongholds were something else too. They were different from dens and from caves. Strongholds were just fortified places and locations. The fortification could be made of wood. The fortification could be made of stone. The fortification could be a moat of water around a city or a village with a drawbridge that protected them so that any oncoming forces would have to go into the water. The poor would find their safety in the dens and the caves. It would not take much to convert a den or a cave for habitation. Getting to the den or the cave safely might have been the biggest problems. As for the rich, they would find their safety in the strongholds. But I'm sure when the strongholds fell, they found their safety in the dens and the caves, like the rest of Israel, over the next period of years. We now come to discover the reason Israel hid in these dens, these caves, and these strongholds under the Midianite oppression. Here we're going to learn how Israel was oppressed. We're going to learn what Midian did to oppress Israel and why Israel moved when the crops were plundered. And I've just told you the reason is because of the plundering of the crops. And here we are in verse number 3. For it was when Israel had sown that the Midianites would come up with the Amalekites and the sons of the east and go against them. So they would camp against them and destroy the produce of the earth as far as Gaza, and leave no sustenance in Israel, as well as no sheep, ox, or donkey. For they would come up with their livestock and their tents, and they would come in like locusts for their number. Both they and their camels were innumerable, and they came into the land to devastate it. More than likely, the first year that the Lord allowed the Midianites to chastise Israel, it was a surprise to Israel, and the people starved. You see, the crops were sown, and it was time for harvest. And from the east, these Midianites arrived with their allies. The yield was destroyed, and the Israelites were left to starve. The herds and their flocks were stolen and driven back to the land of the Midianites and their allies. But more than that, besides stealing the livestock of the Israelites, the Midianites and their allies brought their livestock to consume the grain of Israel and carry back what was left. That happened the first year, and it happened for the next 6 years, really for the next 6 years, because it was a total of 7 years. Now, how many came? The scripture just says they came like locusts for number. All over Israel at harvest time, the tents of the Midianites and their allies could be seen covering all of the country. Soon we will learn that the Midianites will cross the Jordan River and camp for the first time in the valley of Jezreel after moving into the promised land across the Jordan River to come over to plunder. So how did they come in? They came across the Jordan River, made their first camp there in the valley of Jezreel. And from there, you know that is the valley of Armageddon, or the valley of Megiddo. It's got other names too. depending on where you are around the valley, what town you're in. They called it by the name of the town because the town told you in the valley where you were near. It was a like a map in words. So they'd come over and they'd stop and they'd camp the first night in the valley of Jezreel before they'd move out into the promised land in all directions, north, south, west, and down. They and their camels were innumerable, the text says. Israel could do nothing about it. That was the case for Israel every year for 7 years. No doubt the first year, as I told you, was a surprise for all of Israel. Perhaps the second year was a disappointment. And the Israelites were not expecting the Midianites and their allies to return, but they did. Nevertheless, some of the Israelites may have been worried that the second year was going to happen. They took to the dens and caves and the strongholds for safety, hiding their families there and their livestock there and their grains there, their harvest there. And by the third year and thereafter, all the Israelites ran to the hills to hide. All they could hide in these dens and in these caves and in these strongholds. Who were the allies of Midian? The writer tells us of the Amalekites first. As we have stated in previous lessons, the Amalekites are the constant enemy of Israel and will be for a long time. They attacked Israel first at Rephidim when they had just come out of Egypt and were just arriving at Mount Sinai. They attacked Israel while they were camped at Kadesh Barnea at the end of the first year into the second year when the 12 spies had just returned from going and spying out the land. They attacked Israel with the king of Moab in cycle number 2. So this is our second time to see them helping to oppress the nation of Israel in these cycles of sin in the book of Judges. They are here again and will be enemies of Israel for many years to come. The writer tells us that the Midianites were also accompanied by the sons of the east. If you will remember, the father of the Midianites was Midian, the son of Abraham, who before his death, Abraham gave Midian and his brothers a gift and sent them to the east to live. That's in Genesis chapter 25, verses 1 through 6. The Midianites were sons of the east, and so were the descendants of Midian's brothers. So in addition, the descendants of Ishmael were also considered the sons of the east because Abraham sent Ishmael and his mother Hagar away. They traveled to the east to establish his tribe. And furthermore, when Abraham sought a wife for Isaac, where did he send his servant to go find Rebekah? With all of that in mind, he sent him up to the east, to the Euphrates River, to the east in Haran, considered the east, to find Rebekah. But with all that in mind, it seems that any group that lived east of the Jordan River, east of the Promised Land area, on the east side of the Jordan River would be considered sons of the east. And that would include all the people who lived from the Euphrates Valley in the north all the way to the Midianites in the south and all the Arabs of some sort of lineage. As we know, Arabs today in Saudi Arabia and all of that, and in those deserts, the Bedouins, those are sons of the east. So before moving on from this passage, we must address the extent of the plunder of the Midianites and their allies. That writer in the verse we just read says that they plundered as far as Gaza. Now I want you to consider this. If Midian and their allies approached Israel from their homeland in the southeast portion and crossed over the Edomite land and plundered the fields and the livestock all the way to Gaza, the path for Midian to Gaza is not very far. It did not affect the majority of the Promised Land. It would only affect the tribes of Judah and Simeon. But that was not the path of the Midianites. In this same chapter, chapter 6, down when we get to verse 33, we are going to learn that the Midianites and their allies entered the Promised Land and camped in the Valley of Jezreel. That point of fact changes everything. The allies of Midian entered the Promised Land in the central portion of the land and camped just a little ways north of the center portion of the Promised Land. And from there, Midian and his allies would march north and march south, and they did not stop until they reached the shores of the Mediterranean Sea near Gaza. Understand this. Past Gaza going west are sandy shores, not fit for crops or for herding or for sheep. So what this means is that they came in the middle, they went north, they went south, and they went all the way to the shores of the Mediterranean and plundered the crops. Well, at the end of the 7 years, we hear about when Israel cried and when the hope had plundered. Verse number 6. So Israel was brought very low because of Midian, and the sons of Israel cried to the Lord. They had been plundered for 7 years. Their hope was gone. They'd been worshiping Canaanite idols. And so what did they do? They did what they should have done and what they should have always been doing. And they did the same thing that they did at the end of the first cycle and the second cycle and the third cycle when they needed help. They cried to the Lord. Our time is up. So we're going to pick back up in our next time together right here in verse 6. And talk about this verse when we join together again.